You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team, every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day, especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth, you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth, they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth, you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza. Melis.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast with the Rain and Jays. Today, it's me, your boy, Jay King from MassLive.com, here with Sam Jam Packard, the great. Before we get to the basketball stuff, Kyrie, Tatum, we got Baines Houseboat. We got that segment today. We got to pick our five top Celtics players.
No, there's no five. There's no limit to the people who could be on the boat, but Ooh. You don't have to do it. I just met like up to five.
Ooh, new rules this year. Big yeah. Time.
It's a new machine, man. It's a boat now.
It's a new machine. Before we get to all that, though, I just want to say my father, like, I visited home this weekend, and my father has been quoting Sam Jam, is what he calls you. He's been quoting Sam Jam and like cracking up to himself. I'm pretty sure he's a big Sam Jam fan.
I love to hear it. What's he saying? What's my go-to quote?
He has a lot of quotes. He's bringing them up and laughing about them and just chuckling. And that's like, they don't even make sense in the conversation. He's just thinking about your quotes all day. It's kind of weird. A lot
of my jokes don't make sense in the context of conversation. So I feel like that's a good mix.
This is true. It's perfect, really. So,
well, shouts to Mr. King. I appreciate it a lot. I'm a fan of his just because he likes me and he's tangentially related to you. Not tangentially related, directly. He made you. So shouts to Mr. Yeah, King.
He's got a hell of a son. So let's start with our thoughts from the other night. We didn't do a post-game pod. Kyrie down the stretch. We'll start there because that was the end. That was really what won it for the Celtics after Miami cut it to two with a couple minutes left. Were you more nervous about what happened with Kyrie in the first half, the over dribbling and stuff, or were you more optimistic about the last couple minutes? Like, oh yeah, that's that right there. That's why the Celtics wanted that guy.
More optimistic, just because his play directly resulted in winning the game. But it was like classic Kyrie, going on a stretch that's like what you expected. And he scored like, what was it? Nine of the final 10 points and was basically went on like a single-handed 9-0 run. I don't even know if it's a 9-0 run, but one, I just want to note the most unnecessary, reverse layup. Like, couldn't he have just gone up with the left hand and just had an easy layup?
So, it was amazing. It was the spiciest finish he could have had. He was literally wide open. There was nobody there, and he just increased the level of difficulty, increased the flash, and you know what? It worked. Like, Bill Simmons basically tweeted a Kyriegasm afterward. So it caught the attention of people. It worked. It was Kyrie at his best. To me,
I know, but he has a left hand. Like earlier in the game, he'd had a much crazier play where he switched hands midair, right to left, over Kelly Olynyk, and hit a bank layup. That was wild. But so he has a left, but he just wanted to add that more spice, which was hilarious. It was great because it went in.
I'm a big fan of the Kyrie spice. The Kyrie spice cracks me up sometimes. He usually does it, like, and it makes sense, but. That reverse finish, that was just like, I can do this. Why not? Let's just throw that spin in there. To me, I agree with you. More optimistic about the end, and what it was, that was kind of like when you envision Kyrie being fully realized. That was kind of it, right? Like the Celtics got him coming off dribble handoffs, and he had a guy on his hip, and it was too easy. And then they got him going against a closeout, and Goran Dragic had no chance. And then they got him coming around a screen, and by then the Heat were just all screwed up, and he walked into a open three-pointer. Like, that was that stretch. It was kind of what you want from Kyrie and what you want Brad Stevens to unlock from Kyrie, like doing things easier, not necessarily having to do this ISO crap all the time, but still being a brilliant individual scorer. I thought that was like a short, tiny glimpse of Kyrie fully realized. And it was exciting. The last couple of games, he hasn't always been good, but he's shown a lot of flashes, sustained flashes that I don't think he did over the first four games.
Yeah, and I was just thinking about that now. Is it feels like if you gave Brad Stevens enough time just to solely focus on the offense of just like, let's make Kyrie in attack mode constantly, you feel like he's going to figure out like the best ways to get Kyrie open. And I don't know if that is just the like Brad Stevens style. If he's just like implementing an offense, he's not immediately going to focus on all players. It feels like he has much more of a emotion and react. But towards the ends of games, you're right, like, it feels like they were using him in all sorts of different actions that were basically just designed to get him with some momentum heading towards the basket or like being able to pull up for the three. And just that his ability, Kyrie's ability to immediately hit threes off dribble handoffs, like while moving, is incredible and makes him very difficult to guard. And so I think in the fourth quarter, kind of the best way to jumpstart Kyrie is not to go one-on-one. I saw some stat recently tweeted out that like the Celtics ISO percentage is up whatever after six games. And that's even from last year when Isaiah had a lot of ISOs at the later game. But I don't know. I think I was generally encouraged by all the things Kyrie could do and all the kinds of different actions for him. And I just don't know if that's been a real focal point of the Celtics offense, like consistently, especially early in games. It feels like they're just kind of going through the more team offense.
Yeah, that was just like,
and if there's just good focus on Kyrie, it feels like he can succeed.
Yeah, that was like, let's get Kyrie the rock. Let's get him involved. Let's have him end this for us. And he did, and it worked really well. The Celtics offense has not clicked yet. Like, I think they're 20th in offensive efficiency. They're scoring actually worse with Kyrie on the court, and some of that is just he hasn't made three-pointers yet. His three-point percentage is far worse than it's ever been in his career. That's going to change. He's going to be able to finish the basketball. Like, he didn't just stop becoming a finisher. So that's part of it. But like, the whole offense just hasn't clicked yet. What's really carried them, and it's been, to me, an absolute stunner, especially with Gordon Hayward going down and Marcus Morris being out this whole time and Marcus Smart missing a couple games. The offense is ranked second in the entire NBA.
The defense
is ranked second in the entire NBA, and like, I'm shocked. I am totally shocked. They're starting a 19-year-old. They're starting a 21-year-old. They shouldn't be this good at defense.
Yeah, but that 19-year-old happens to be like the longest and sneaky, largest basketball player you've ever seen, and that 21-year-old is super athletic and can guard pretty much any position on the court. So there's reasons why it's working out. They're generating a lot of turnovers. They're winning the turnover battle in every game they play, and it feels and getting out and running, which is kind of the strong suit of especially Jaylen Brown, but the entire team. It's just teams more athletic. We're right. Their length has been kind of impressive, just the amount of steals they're generating. And I think the other reason, I know you've been you were a huge fan of his game on Saturday, Aaron Baines.
Baines.
He's been amazing. He's been a rock.
He's exactly what they needed. He protects the rim. He's not going to block a ton of shots, but guys, he impacts shots at the rim. He rebounds like hell. When he's in the game, the Celtics have by far the best defensive rebound rate in the league, like relative to what other teams are doing. And right now, they're fourth overall defensive rebound rate. Like, who the hell are you? And what have you done with the Brad Stevens Celtics? But Jason Tatum can rebound. Aaron Baines can rebound. Jaylen Brown's a good wing rebounder. Al Horford, now that he's playing the four, he's rebounding like he didn't last year. Like, the whole
Smart
defense.
Smart can rebound. The guards rebound.
Yeah,
like,
Smart rebounds.
The highest jumper ever.
All of a sudden, yeah. Like, this is this is a quality rebounding team. It's weird. It's fantastic for the Celtics. And Baines has a lot to do with that. Baines against the Heat was just fantastic. He contested shots without fouling. He impacted shots. He just enjoys doing the shit that very few people enjoy. And that he knows what he's good at. That's all he cares about doing. I've been a big Aaron Baines guy this year. And then Al Horford has been a monster. Like, that dude is guarding great players most of the time. He's really done a great job on Ben Simmons. He's done a great job on Giannis. He's done a great job on Kristaps Porzingis. Like, Al Horford is playing all defensive team level defense, and he has just been a stud in the early going. But
yeah, so but good combination to have those two guys as your starting front court.
But I think the question is this defense for real? Like, is this actually a top five defense, or is this an early season facade?
It's hard to react to that question. Like, initially my response is no way the Celtics are a top five defense. Like, they're so young. Eventually they're going to like regress to the mean, but you know, being the optimist, and also thinking just like, what would be the reason why this defense got worse? Like, Tatum's not getting any smaller. Baines isn't getting any smaller. I guess they could, just generate a lot less turnovers, but they still feel like they have the components in place. Especially with how well they're rebounding to keep going. And, sure, why not? It could be sustainable. At least top 10 defense. That seems reasonable at this point. Six games is like 7% of the season. We've seen 7%. That's enough sample size in my book.
The only thing that I would point out is they haven't really played a top offense yet. Like, you could say Cleveland, but Cleveland's been a mess. And I know Milwaukee has Giannis, but they don't have many other dynamic threats. The Knicks, definitely not a top offense. The Heat, definitely not a top offense. So I do want to see how the Celtics hold up against the better teams, like the Orlando Magics of the world.
The Orlando Magic are killing it right now.
Yeah,
second in net rating.
I couldn't actually keep a straight face saying that, but they are second, not only second in net rating, they're second in offensive rating, which is absurd. Like, I don't know what's going on in Orlando.
They're 4-1, baby. The Magic are making a run.
Yeah, but I think the Magic
are all in on Magic in the playoffs. Magic for the 8th seed.
The Magic are also very much evidence that what happens over the first 5 or 6 games doesn't necessarily compute over the rest of the season, because they are not sustaining what they're doing. There's no chance that is going to be a top 5 offense. I would be shocked. I would be shocked. But back to the Celtics. The one thing I see as regression, possible regression, the Celtics are giving up something like 6 three-pointers a game, and they're leading the league, I believe, in three-point percentage against, and that could regress. Like, they're not going to play the Knicks, and they're not going to play Milwaukee, and they're not going to play these teams forever. Like, even the Cavs, they don't have as many shooters as they used to. They were starting Dwayne Wade and Derrick Rose on opening night, so I think that's the one area where the Celtics might stand to regress the most, but I'm pretty sold that this is at least a good defense. And I wasn't at all sold when the preseason started, but when you see it in action, all the length, all the versatility, it matters. Like, Jason Tatum, he's 19, sure, but his arms they extend everywhere and they really impact things. And Jaylen Brown, yeah, he made some boneheaded mistakes last year. He's not had the greatest offensive couple of games the past two nights, but he's really committed to the defensive end. And so I'm a lot higher on this Celtics defense than I was coming into the season, which is crazy because they lost Jay Crowder. They lost Avery Bradley. They lost Amir Johnson, who I know didn't have a great year last year, but was still a solid defender. And then they lost Gordon Hayward on opening night, and Morris and Smart, and like, everything has gone against this team defensively, but there they are, like, number two in defense. It's really, really impressive what they've done at that end, and it's critical because their offense has not flowed at all.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how they play against the Spurs, who are always just, like, a well-coached and, like, well-executed team. The things that, like, you mentioned 3-point percentage against, and this is a wild conspiracy theory, but haven't the Celtics been, like, top five in that over, like, the Pat, like, Brad Stevens' entire era? I'm pretty sure there's always an argument about, like, how the Celtics get lucky on an opponent 3-point percentage, or, like, that is, like, the most random stat. But I'm convinced that there's something Brad Stevens knows that he's not telling us that's making other teams shoot threes at a lower rate.
Brad the Wizard.
Because the Celtics are all, like, have been, I'm pretty sure, like, top five in that in the past, like, 3 years. So, I don't know. There's no real sound logic behind that one. But that's a gut feeling. Just go with my gut on that.
Yeah.
But you're right. They haven't played anyone who you would consider a great offense. And the Spurs you expect to execute, but who knows without Kawhi.
And if you have a great three-point shooting defense, like, you're going to give up more than 6.8 threes per game. That's just going to happen. That's, like, this is 2017, man. Teams aren't going to shoot 28.7% against you from three-point range forever. It's just not going to happen. Everything else, though, Boston Celtics defense, they have been really, really good. And it's a stunner, man. It is an absolute stunner. I don't know what to think about it. Let's get to Tatum, though, because we talked about his defense a little bit. Six games in, Jason Tatum, man, holy crap. That dude is a lot more complete than scouts suggested during the draft process. Like, this dude is out here playing D. He's rebounding. He's taking the right shots. He's working in the post. He's hitting threes. Like, Jason Tatum has just done everything. He's like the oldest playing 19-year-old in the world.
Yeah, he's also attacking the rim, getting to the line a bunch. Like,
he leads the Celtics in free throw attempts, man. What?
It's wild how, like, long he is, so sneaky long, and how, but he's still fast enough to beat the bigger guys off the dribble. He's just been consistently impressive, and each, like, the more he does it, the more kind of shocking he is, because anyone, I guess, can have a great game, even though you don't expect rookies to do that in their first 2 weeks of the season. But the more consistent he plays, it's just amazing. Like, he's only 19 years old, and there's room for him to just get better every day. So even when you have, like, Jaylen Brown has not been as consistent. It feels like Jaylen Brown has had a couple of great games, but Tatum's brought it every single night. It's been, like, if the Celtics didn't have that, there's probably no way they're on the four-game winning streak right now.
Yeah, he's just been really, really solid. Really good. I think every area of weakness that people thought he had, he hasn't really had. Like, he's gotten to the rim. He's drawn free throws. He hasn't fallen in love with the mid-range hardly at all. He's taking, like, a little more than one mid-range attempt per game. He's taking more three-pointers. He's shooting 50% from deep. Like, Jason Tatum has been just well beyond, I think, anybody's reasonable expectations for him. Like, this is a playoff team he's playing for. He's playing 30-plus minutes a game. He's averaging 15 points. He's averaging 6.3 rebounds. He's shooting more than 50% from the field. He's shooting more than 50% from three. Like, this kid has just been a stud. I can't say enough about how impressed I've been by Jason Tatum. He has just, wow. And obviously the strength thing is something that he's going to have to work on for a long time. But, like, Justice Winslow was guarding him for a little while against the Heat, and he did a pretty good job. Like, he drew a foul one time when Winslow tried to get it in his shit. Another time Winslow closed out, he gave an up fake, drove by, used his length to draw a foul. Like, he's just really, really done a good job. Jason Tatum, man. Jason freaking Tatum.
Let's start the Rookie of the Year campaign right now. I feel like Ben Simmons. Basketball Twitter's already Simmons. Anointed Ben Simmons. You know, Ben Simmons hasn't – he's only attempted three threes and doesn't shoot at all.
Yeah, but he's averaging, like, damn near a triple-double, and he's going to all year for the Sixers. Ben's,
yeah, but we've been fooled already by a Sixers point guard putting up some empty stats.
Like, oh, you're going to compare Ben Simmons to MCW now?
Hey, they're just getting these numbers while being a point guard on a bad Philadelphia 76ers team. I feel like I'm doing apples to apples there.
Yeah.
Whereas Jason Tatum is going to be in the playoffs playing serious minute for, what, a top four team in the East? I feel like that's a little bit more impressive. Also, Jason Tatum is 19. Ben Simmons is 21. And if you want to go the John Corrales route that I don't really agree with, you can argue that Simmons isn't even a rookie. This is his second year. not my rookie of the year. I'm going with I'm voting for Tatum.
I'm glad you'll use your vote well. But okay, real question. When Marcus Morris comes back and he's fully healthy and he's completely cleared, who do you start?
I start Jason Tatum. I would think so. I don't know.
but I'm saying like do you slide Marcus Morris in there? Do you take Aaron Baines out? Do you?
I think you're going to see a lot of depending on matchup. I think you'll see Morris be in there for Baines. I don't know. They're playing. We just mentioned how good that defensive team pairing of Horford and Baines is.
78.2 points per 100 possessions they've given up. That's outrageous.
So that feels like a lineup you'd like to go to a lot. And at this point, the only reason I would have for starting Morris over, at this point, I want to keep Tatum in the game. So I think there's going to be some times where you're going to go Morris Horford. But I think if you're going to start Baines Horford, you would still start Jason Tatum over Marcus Morris at this point. I just think Tatum's more dynamic of a scorer and can probably. He's giving you a lot defensively right now. I don't know how much an improvement Marcus Morris is. I think Morris and Tatum can definitely play next to each other, but I wouldn't really put Morris in at the three over Tatum.
I did not expect to be having this conversation this early. I thought for sure Tatum was going to be coming off the bench. I thought, you know, they'd be lucky if they got him 15 or 20 minutes and he was okay. No, that kid is just blowing away expectations. He's like the other night. I guess it was last night, but the other night when you people are going to be listening, he was out with a few minutes left in the game, and I'm thinking to myself, they got to get Tatum back in there. Like Tatum's a star. what are they doing without what are they doing without Tatum in there? And he had been great, and he deserved to be on the court. And they were better with him on the court. So, yeah. And I did not expect to be at this stage already with him. And I do think some of his shooting could be regression to the mean type thing. I don't think he's going to shoot 50% from deep forever. But I also think he hasn't really been aggressive. And I want to see, there were times he had mismatches. He had Josh Richardson on him in the post for many possessions in a row, and the Celtics didn't really feed him in that matchup. I want to see what happens with that. I don't know. I know he was, I think he was the very most efficient low post scorer in all of the NCAA basketball last year, or at least high major NCAA. He's a super talented post scorer, but I want to see if he can do that and kind of do it consistently in the NBA. I want to see what happens with that. We haven't seen it yet. He's been a low usage type of guy, low usage, high efficiency type of guy. I think he could even stand to use more possession. I did not expect to get to this point at this stage. I am totally, I don't think I'm overreacting though. He's just been really good and he's been really efficient. And I do think when he posted up Tyler Johnson, he sealed him super mature, 30-year-old post move, oh yeah, let me seal this little dude, get perfect post position, bam, finish over him, super easy, no wasted motion, nothing. That kid's just very, very, he's just got an old game, man, old man game already, just really, really impressive. So I want to see what he becomes. I don't know what he'll become the rest of the season, but I think there's more to him than he's given so far, even if his efficiency will go down.
And I think he's going to get a lot of opportunity to be the go-to scorer when Kyrie and Horford, or just Kyrie is on the bench. And I think that role actually will fit him quite well if he does end up playing less minutes with Morris is returning. But I think he's done – we saw, I think, over the, like, the last two or three games where towards the end of the first quarter, the start of the second quarter, there's times when it's normally bench units and it's a lot of Smart and Rozier. It feels like those units have been not as bad as they in the past, just because Tatum's been in the game and able to give them some points. So if he becomes the go-to guy in that, where he really tries to exploit the other team's bench units, I think he has a real chance to shine. So I'm with you. I already told you that he should be the rookie of the year. So, and you've already called him a star in this podcast. So I feel like we're both on the Team Tatum bandwagon.
Did I call him a star?
I think you said, yeah, you said, this dude's on the bench. He's a star. He should be getting 35 minutes a game.
Oh, like he was a star. I don't think I called him a star. Like, let's let that happen if it happens at some point. But the guy's been really good. He's got a chance.
Come on, Jay.
He's got a chance. He's got a chance to be really good.
You called him a star. Own it.
He's got a chance to be really, really good. Let's just put it like that. He
Middleman Jay has lukewarm takes about Jason Tatum. Come on.
He's got a chance to be really, really freaking good, man. I've raved about him enough. People can probably understand that I think he absolutely has a chance to be a star. I don't know what qualifies a person for a star, but he's got a lot to his game. He plays both ends. He rebounds. He's damn, like Tatum, man.
He's star-like. He's similar to a star.
He is on the Aaron Baines houseboat. So we got to start the Aaron Baines houseboat. For those of you who don't know, the Aaron Baines houseboat is our new mystery machine. Last year we picked the five best players from the week, or the five people who deserved it most, five Celtics figures who deserved it most from the week, and had them ride Jaylen Brown's mystery machine. This year, it's Aaron Baines' theoretical houseboat that we are voting people onto. Jason Tatum is my first pick. He is the first pick in the Aaron Baines houseboat.
So much fun down on the boat. Jay, you're new to this, so I'll explain the rules again. Last year, we picked five people for the mystery machine, but this is Aaron Baines' big Australian boat. So, like, you can fit as many people as you possible, but you don't have to put five people on. So if you deserve to get a ride on the boat, you deserve to get it. But Tatum's the absolute right choice. We just spent like 30 minutes gushing about him. I'm going to follow that up with Al Horford. We talked earlier about his just great defense. He had that amazing offensive game. Him and Kyrie seemed to really develop a connection on offense late in that Bucks game. He's just been solid all around. He's been the kind of the Al Horford that if you're able to watch every Al Horford game for a season, you'll immediately fall in love with Al Horford. He's just like, he puts the fun in fundamentals, and he of course gets a ride on the boat.
All right. Since I'm new to this, is Aaron Baines always on his houseboat?
No, Aaron Baines got to earn it.
Okay. So Aaron Baines is the next pick. First of all, for challenging Giannis at the rim. That was a badass move. I know Baines almost got killed. I know he almost met God, but seriously, like that was a badass move. I've always been a fan of guys who don't care about getting dunked on, who just challenge things, and that was the ultimate circumstance because Giannis rose to the clouds, and Giannis is a big, powerful man, and Baines went up there, challenged him, but he didn't just do that. He then came back against Miami and was fantastic. So Aaron Baines is absolutely, he earned a spot on his houseboat.
Now here's where the houseboat, I think, gets interesting, because did anyone else do you think really deserves extra recognition for their play over the last week? Kyrie seemed to have struggled, but he did have that like nice run at the end of Miami game.
He won the Miami game, and he also won the Milwaukee game. He was fantastic in the Milwaukee game. I think Kyrie deserved
it. Oh, so winning two games of the week? All right, yeah. No, I think that's a reasonable case. When you framed it like he won both games, I think that's a good reason.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't been great yet. He hasn't totally hit his stride. I thought he was great in the Milwaukee game. That was his best game. And then down the stretch against Miami, they were teetering. They were struggling. Jaylen Brown had gotten a technical. The damn wheels were falling off. And Kyrie was like, yo, just get me the ball. I'm about to do some spicy reverse shit, and we're good. And so he gets on the boat for that. Is there anybody else?
The only other person I could think of was Daniel Tice. I think Tice has been decent.
Tice has been perfectly decent. And
like, that's way more than I expected.
And Marcus Smart had a hell of a game. But I don't think – and he talked shit to DJ Wilson or whoever – whichever rookie that – Bucks rookie that was at the end of the bench. So I think Smart and Tice both threatened. I think Semi Ojeleye even threatened just for a few of his possessions on Giannis. But I don't know if any of those guys were, like, quite good enough to get on the boat.
They're not boat level.
I think we have to, like, really make them earn that boat level. Marcus, well,
Aaron Baines would make you earn it if you were coming onto his boat. So I feel like we have to hold a similar standard.
I don't know. I feel like Aaron Baines would just be like, I was going to do the Australian voice again, but I'm not going to do it. I feel like he would just invite everybody on.
Like, oh, yeah. Come on down to the boat.
Come on down to the boat, mate. Oh, you too, mate. You know, like, he would just have everybody. So, but we have a lot higher standards than Aaron Baines. We are more stringent. Is that even the word? I don't even know what that word means. I think it's right.
No, I think you nailed it. Our criteria is more stringent.
We're stringent as a mug.
We stringent AF. See?
So, yeah, that seems like a good place to end. Just the most stringent podcast that the world has ever seen. We got four people rocking with four people on the houseboat this time. Terry Rozier was a candidate for a while, but wasn't quite up to par the last couple of games.
Shouts to Tito, though. Still making steals. It just his shooting hasn't been as good.
Still defending. Still rebounding that bitch. He is Terry Rozier, man. Terry Tito. We'll call him Tito.
Once you get on board with Tito, it's really going to take off because it will give it that magical J. King bump. I feel like 40% of my Twitter followers are just times after you said, hey, follow this dude on Twitter. So if we can get Tito, that famous J. King bump, I feel like we can really take it places. So I don't know what I got to do to, like, have you officially sign off on calling him Tito, but just let me know.
I'm not a big Tito guy, but I might be able to be enticed. We'll see. I'm a little more stringent about my nicknames, I guess.
We just learned you're stringent AF.
All right, that's it. Everybody who does not subscribe to us, search for Locked On Celtics wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, iTunes, wherever else. Anywhere. Audio Boom, Stitcher, where else? I don't even know where we are these days, but we're everywhere. Locked On Celtics, give us a 5-star rating, subscribe to us, come back. We're every day, Monday through Friday, the only Daily Celtics podcast, the best Daily Celtics podcast, the best Celtics podcast, period. And that's it for this episode of the Locked On Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Yeah, J. King and John Corrales, Locked On Celtics.